Okay, you there?
I am.
Okay, hey, we're here. I think we're, here's our recording. Okay, well, this is our 212 Connection call. It is April 10th, 2008, and it's on communication, which is what we're doing here. So, good analogy. And we were just doing the weather reports before you got on the call, Dad.
Oh, really?
Yeah, what's, Jeff Cluxton's up in Indiana. He says it's cold and a little chilly, at least, and rainy. What's it doing in Nashville?
It's still 74 degrees here, but they say that we're going to get some of that band that's coming from the west. So we're supposed to get lower temperatures and rain tonight. But no, it's gorgeous all day long.
Well, I was sitting here, you know, getting ready for the call, and you know, as you do as well, we do a lot of these conference calls with other people, and a lot of times we'll talk about, you know, where they're at and what they're doing. And I thought, you know, I'm a visual guy. I thought, well, hey, I'd like to see, you know, where they're at. So I did that for everybody. I'll either embarrass myself or it'll be interesting. If you go to the webcast page that's up right now, where people are listening to the webcast, or where you got the telephone call, you know, numbers here, and scroll down on the content, I have three links there, and you can see where I am. It's got a link for the house. It'll show you my big house that we're building. It's got straw bale walls. You'll be able to see it through the plastic. Straw bale walls. It's very different style. You'll see the aspen grove, and you'll see snow, because that's from today. And then there's a link that says trailer. That's what I'm sitting in right now as we speak. At 9,000 feet in Pikes Peak National Forest, I'm in a little trailer on my high-speed internet and my phone line.
Now, what are you talking about, Kevin?
If it's on the 212 connection call, it should be on. What, did I put it in the right spot? Are you not seeing it?
I don't see anything.
Hmm.
I don't see what you're talking about. I went back to the web page that we've got up.
Yeah, the live call page. I'm looking at it here. Should be one for house, trailer, and then me. It actually shows me sitting in this thing.
Man, I am clueless. I do
really?
Not see.
Somebody.
Oh, wait a minute. You got to scroll down.
Got to scroll down.
Oh, yeah. You got to scroll down where it says newsletters, blogs, podcasting. You got to scroll down.
There you go. Yeah, scroll down.
Well, how'd you do that, dude?
Under the bullet points. So you can see where I am sitting right now, so that'll either be embarrassing or impressive. To me, it's pretty cool to be doing business while you're sitting out in the national park in a trailer building a big, odd house. So there you go. There's one of your speakers. Now, you know what? We need to do this for the next call.
Yeah.
In your new digs.
Yeah.
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 We should get that up.
That trailer's really impressive, dude.
My kids painted that.
That is really impressive.
It stays warm and does what I need it to do. I can manage the guys working on the house and sitting here and do what I got to do. It's great. Well, hey, communication. Speaking of communicating through visual, that's what this call is about. We're going to take you through, and this is, of course, this is stuff that a lot of you are dabbling in. You hear it from us a lot, and we were actually talking, my dad and I talking today about it, and there's just the reality that there still are a few people who are really doing it well, and I think it's kind of, to me, it's kind of that idea of, I'll use network marketing as an example where they promote that and say, oh, you know, you do it, you know, 1 hour a week, you don't have to sell or talk to anybody, and you'll make millions. And we all know that doesn't work. The people who are doing anything, it's a full-time job, and you got to have some, you know, some skill sets. It's the same thing with this communication, with all these bullet points that we've listed out, that it's not just an afterthought, that the people that are really driving business to their, or driving people to their business, driving traffic and getting, you know, conversions, are people who are really owning it. I mean, they're taking it. It's a campaign. And, I mean, Dad, people have heard this, but I like redundancy, and they always hear something different. You know, you started coaching. You had some some word of mouth just around town. But when you started doing your newsletter, that was your thing. You didn't do, I mean, gosh, they didn't have podcasting or blogging back then.
Back then, that's right.
You weren't doing a radio show. You weren't doing TV. You weren't really, well, now, you know, we should back up. Your first mode of communication was speaking, and it was at church.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct. Kevin, let me kind of do a little bit of just groundwork here too. I've been thinking about this. A few weeks ago, we did a teleseminar titled "Thou Shall Prosper." We talked about how everybody is selling, but you know, "Thou Shall Prosper," and that actually has been on my mind because it's the title of a book that my Wednesday morning group is still going through. We've probably spent more time on this book than we ever have a book in history. But my Wednesday morning group, as most of you know, is a group of 12 guys. Dave Ramsey and I started it about 7 or 8 years ago now. And it's been a powerful force in my life, something that I wish for everybody to have, a group of guys like that. It's truly the biblical adage, iron sharpens iron, where we get together, challenge each other. We go through a lot of materials together, and just kind of whoever suggests something, they bring it in and we digest it. Well, this book has continued to really prod our thinking in a lot of ways, but I read in there, in that book, in talking about why the Jewish people are so successful financially, the author, Rabbi Daniel Lapin, says that money is a reflection of the strength of your relationships. And I've really thought about that. And, I mean, you have to realize, you know, I am not a socializer. I'm not a Robin Williams. I'm not somebody to walk in a room and want to shake 60 hands. You know, I'm really more of a loner than that. That's why I love writing. I love the way that we live out here in the country. But as he developed the idea, you know, I saw how much of what I've done has been based on having relationships. And I really think he's pretty accurate in that. Not being a socializer, I have a network that is pretty unbelievable, pretty amazing at this point. A network of connections that I've developed over really the last 20 years. But the power of those relationships open a tremendous number of doors for me. So I want to encourage you, even if you are not somebody who's real outgoing, gregarious, social, you're not the cheerleader, that's okay. Now, some of you are, and I met with a new client, a new Eagles Club client today. He's actually a pastor, and he is that kind of person. He's high I, which really probably has some bearing on this. All of you have taken the DISC profile, the 48 Days Personality Profile, and we have on there those four classic characteristics, the D, I, S, and C. I'm extremely high in D, and I just make it over the midline in C. I, the one that is people-connected, influencing, outgoing, and all that, is absolutely at the bottom. I'm extremely low in that. So I've worked at developing, you know, the connections and relationships that I have to do well in the things that I do. Again, not because, again, not in violating how God has wired me, but in just recognizing the importance of having relationships and connectedness and networking. Now, another thing, so I want to talk about this. Really want to talk about this whole process, even in terms of I've been developing a concept that I'm calling spiritual energy, where I see people who are in poverty. Not only do they not have any money, but they're really depleted in many ways, almost without exception. Their energy is gone. You know, the light is gone out of their eyes. They're depleted. They don't have spiritual energy, and I think spiritual energy can, you know, is the vital force that can help us be healthy, wealthy, and wise, I guess, but, you know, healthy, and it does help us have strong, vibrant relationships and ultimately leads to wealth. And I just see these things being tied together. I've been doing a lot of research, and I'm going to do some writing kind of on that topic of spiritual energy and how I see it being played out in people who are successful in multiple areas of their lives, and again, they tend to be tied together, or they're unsuccessful in multiple areas of their lives. Now, here's the other tricky component that we have to deal with here. Most of us are selling an intangible. If we were selling furniture or carpet or, you know, bottles of water, we can easily identify the components that are going to determine what we can charge for that. So we have so much length, height, volume, something like that, that is going to quickly identify the value. But when we're selling a service, when we're selling coaching or counseling or somehow equipping people, that's really an intangible. So it's a much different process of identifying what is the value. Now, last Sunday, Joanne and I went to an art show it was actually at the Jewish Temple here. They had invited 50 area artists, and it was a major deal. And we went out there and walked through. Now, the interesting thing about art is, you know, I look at it and I, gee, there's a $3 canvas and $2 worth of paint on it, you know, so we've got $5 worth of materials. And then I look down, the price tag is $12,000, and I think, how is that possible that somebody sees this as having a value of $12,000? But at an art show like this, you get to talk to the artist, and all of a sudden you see, you know, a little 90-year-old lady who has devoted her life to this one particular process that she uses to create art. And she's established a reputation. There's a limited supply of what she has. And so all of a sudden, the value is not the $5 in materials. It goes up dramatically because you know the history and there's some kind of a connectedness with the artist. And people who purchase art, you know, do it that way. They buy it based on the reputation of the artist. We are artists in that way. There's not something that we can just hold up and weigh and measure and say, well, it ought to be worth this much. No, it's the strength of our reputation and our relationships that is going to determine the value of what we offer. So it's critically important that we do the things that establish rapport and trust with people. In one of the sections on Coaching 101, and many of you who have gone through the competency overview, you know, recall that section of, you know, how do we sell something? 40% of the process is developing rapport and trust. If somebody doesn't trust you, it doesn't matter if you've got, you know, gold watches for $8. They aren't going to buy them. 30% is identifying the needs of that person. So we got 70% that's very relationship-oriented. Then 20% is product presentation or product knowledge, and then 10% is closing. But all of those things deal with how do you value something that is intangible. So if you have a process, so you have a service that you're going to sell to people, how do you get people to pay you money? And we know that even in traditional selling, you know, most sales take place after somebody has had 7 exposures to something. They don't typically buy on the first exposure. So how can you get that repetitive presentation to people out there who are your prospects, establish value, you know, identify your reputation, your credibility, and then ultimately get them to place the same value on your time and service that you do? So the things that we're talking about doing here are then the tools for how you begin that exciting process of identifying, you know, your spiritual energy and your real ultimate value, because it's an intangible that we're selling and not just a product. Kevin, does that make sense, man?
Yeah. I mean, gosh, it's a great tangent. I wish you'd given me that spiel before we put the information out on this, because it's great. And you're mainly saying all these communication tools are creating a relationship, which
they really are.
That is
the
foundation.
That's the goal. They've got to be creating a relationship.
Well, and it comes to some of the details that we're going to get into, that, yeah, the stuff that you were much more philosophical and deep about, you know, what I said or what I have in here, as far as we're not just putting out information just to be putting it out. We have newspapers full of advertising and stuff that's being pushed at us, but we're providing value, creating those relationships. And I sure have seen that with you. With your, you know, you did that first, yeah, and starting speaking at a church, and then with your newsletter, and you created a relationship with, you know, hundreds of thousands of people that trust you and buy whatever you have to sell.
You know, they do, and it still amazes me the connectedness that can be created even if you've never talked to a person personally. So if you are doing the kind of things that we're going to be going through here, yeah, you really can create relationships where people trust you and feel like they know you. And this couple that came in this afternoon, I met them for the very first time at 2 o'clock this afternoon. I've never laid eyes on them before, didn't know the name or anything. But they came in, I mean, totally ready to go because they've been following my stuff. They have everything that I've ever written. He's been promoting the 48 Days No More Mondays in their church environment. So there was no hesitancy at all. Their trust was already established. They came in ready to go to work on creating a transition. Yeah, now we can kind of go back to what you started with, Kevin. Yeah, the way that I started was speaking, and it was simply teaching a Sunday school class. And in that environment, yeah, there is trust that's established because in a church environment, we would certainly hope that. And seeing people week after week after week, that was the first little nucleus group. It was interesting. We had a group over here the other night. We had five couples over here to have dinner together because we've been friends for so long. But those friendships were created came to the Sunday school class that I was teaching. And out of that, we've developed lifelong friendships, have seen our children grow up, and a lot of other things happen over the years.
Well, it's such a great premise that, yeah, as we look at each of these pieces, it's something, hey, I can always use a reminder to keep in mind. Now, we always try to think of that when we're putting communication out, what's in it for the WIIFM, what's in it for me? And you're really putting the perspective here on that everything we're putting out, we're building a relationship. And if we're doing that, it drastically alters what we're putting out there. And you have. You've been a great example of doing that in your newsletter. I mean, everybody on this call has probably gotten the newsletter for the 48 Days newsletter for quite a while and seeing that in there you're sharing from your personal life, one, and then two, sharing your best, your absolute best in your content, and it's free. And from that, you've reaped a lot.
You know, and with that, and Kevin, you know that you and I have had these discussions repeatedly where, you know, I'm always pushing for what can we give away,
mm-hmm.
Sometimes to the point where I know it frustrates you, but my push is always, you know, how can we just give more information out?
Yeah.
But when I was on the radio years ago, I used to have other career coaches, which was how I was identified at that point, who would criticize me saying, you know, when somebody calls up, God, they ask about a resume or about doing an interview, you tell them everything they need to know. Why would they need any of us? Well, that really comes from a scarcity mentality rather than an abundance mentality. I don't know how else to frame that. But, you know, I've learned through personal experience that in giving freely, people come back again and again and again and take advantage of whatever that you then offer to them in terms of resources, whether it's, you know, personal coaching or books or teleseminars or ebooks or all the things that we encourage people to get involved in offering. It's not like you have to just tease them and then somehow they're going to step up to the plate with their, you know, with their wallets open. I mean, I give a ton and always have. And on a radio show, we did that. Well, having a radio show absolutely exploded the purchasing of our products originally, you know, in doing that. We can go through the things that you have identified here.
Well, what you're saying is, you know, so many pieces of it that are powerful and pieces of stuff that I made further notes on. On your giving away, I don't know of any more powerful example of that than Seth Godin. He did that with which book?
Idea Virus. Was a book that Seth Godin, who he had written Permission Marketing, but then he came back with Idea Virus, and he made it available free. Didn't have a publisher.
Didn't he have a publisher, though?
No.
Yeah, okay, he did. Okay.
Not on that one. That one goes back a few years, and he just simply wrote it 97 pages long, so it wasn't a full trade book or anything, 97 pages, and made it free. Well, over 250,000 people downloaded it. But just like he talks about in Idea Virus, incidentally, I still have that available as a, I'm not sure that he still has it available as a free download, but I know I have it, and it's really no problem to pass
it out. Well, tell the numbers real quick. Like, even with a published book, a traditionally published book, we know that statistically the average book's going to sell, 3,000 copies.
Mm-hmm.
A book that sells 30 or 50,000 is thought of by the publishers as a, really good book.
30 is a home run for a publisher.
A home run.
30,000, yes.
30,000, yeah. And you're in the 250,000 category with 48 days, and we've got people like Rick Warren with Purpose Driven Life that are at 20 million. But if
30,
you go back
34,
to the,
actually.
Is it really? Goodness.
Yeah.
If you go back to the little numbers and think, here's Seth, this guy self-publishes a book, and how many people downloaded it for free?
Over 250,000 downloaded it for free.
Any wise person would think, well, geez, you just gave away, there went your market. Everybody who
there
wanted
went your
it,
market. He saturated everybody that could possibly ever want it.
Yeah.
Then he went to a traditionally published book and went right to number one on Amazon and New York Times because he had seeded the market so much with the free book. It was the buzz everywhere. People were talking about it. He got coverage in all the business magazines like Inc., Success, Entrepreneur, Fast Company, had articles on it. And it also, that positioned him as a $50,000 keynote speaker,
wow,
which up until that time he was pretty much an unknown. So it's, you can do things that are creative and do things that don't have to change your personality, but just do things that, again, build a relationship, build the trust and credibility.
Well, and in consult, in the work that I do, branding and marketing, I have, I'm getting used to, just what you're saying, give it all away. Another piece of that that I experience is a lot. I'll often have people come on and want to start small. They'll do 5 hours with me, and in that, we usually, really, really hit their branding and make decisions on that. And then it's okay. We've got the headline. We've got the tagline. We've got the elevator pitch. We know our direction. Now what do we do? And I just lay it out. We do, here's the website. Here's how we're going to position it. Here's the flow. Here's the outline. We get that. And I literally tell them everything there is to do and give them the resources. I have not had anybody yet who's just said, okay, good, I'm gone.
Mm-hmm.
They say, okay, can I purchase another block? And will you do it or lead me?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's the case for a lot of people providing services. You tell people how to do it, and ultimately they'll still use you, to do that. And, gosh, we get a lot of resources, a lot of people putting out free newsletters, free things that we do, that I use. I'll have somebody, and I'll get a lot of stuff answered and use them. And ultimately those are the people who I will at some point spend a dollar with.
Sure.
Sure.
Well, I was working with a businessman yesterday and was talking about how to structure services as a consultant. And I said that I have had arrangements with companies where I've had a flat monthly retainer with them to give them unlimited access to me. And he's like, oh, my gosh, how could you possibly do that and have more than one company? I have never had a company take advantage of that. I've had companies that in the course of 3 months never contacted me, to the point where I would feel guilty and talk to them about it. And I said, no, we just want to know that you're available. So, again, sometimes you think you have to push and pull and structure it to make sure you're getting paid for your time. I've found that going the other way, people don't take advantage of that. When I do the Eagles Club with people, I stress to them that I'm available to them while we're going through that process. Now, once in a while, I had a gentleman last year that pretty well wore me out on that, but that's a real rarity. For the most part, people are busy in their own lives. They're happy to have the structured time that we have outlined to be together. And beyond that, they just don't bug me a whole lot. Well, let's talk about some of the things that you've got here, Kevin.
Yeah, I do, and I was trying to think, just as I was thinking of examples, and I was trying to think for myself, who do I ultimately utilize, you know, vendors and service providers, who do I utilize personally or spend money with, who's not communicating with me in one of these ways? And I don't know of anybody. I mean, it's pretty much a given. If somebody's not communicating with you, you're not using them, and it's the same way for us. So, and we look at what are the pieces, and this kind of comes back to you talking about a personality profile. Some of these are going to fit you. I do this a lot with clients, you know, when we're looking at communication options. You know, what does fit you? Do you like speaking? Does that fit you? Oh, you know, no, I don't like it in front of other people. Well, do you like writing? Yeah, that I like. Okay, well, that opens up newsletters and blogs. You know, do you like, maybe not speaking in front of people, but you do enjoy, you know, talking, you're verbal. Well, podcasting, great option. And we have something for everybody. I mean, so something, one thing's going to fit you, and I think, you know, you can pick one thing and really go strong with it, though most people these days are doing all of them. So we want to start with newsletters. That's obviously the one that's so foundational, has been for you.
Has been for me. I started on the 48 Days newsletter in August of 2000, so 7.5 years ago. Started that at 67 names. And then it has just grown virally, where those people shared it with other people. I mean, we get letters every week, you know, from people who say, gee, I forwarded this to all the people in my company or all the members in my congregation or all the people on my own email list. And we just continue to get those kind of letters. Now, I don't really look at the newsletter. I don't track statistics much. In terms of trying to identify, when we send the newsletter out, you know, how many product sales are connected with that? I'm not sharp enough in the technology to really understand how to do it. I just do a lot of things and just know that in the combination, things seem to work out pretty well. But I don't look at each newsletter thinking, well, if I write it in this way, how many people are going to click through and purchase something? And what I try to do is make the newsletter about 85% just free content and about 15% perhaps, you know, opportunities to go through to more resources.
And that's one side of the equation, is the direct product sales. And then the other one is, as we've learned, is just the numbers, the audience.
And now, one of the things that we've found, too, and when we used to really track the numbers carefully when we were doing like revenue sharing because of promotion on Dave Ramsey's show and stuff, we would track it. And what we found is that people would purchase. People would come to our website because they'd hear, you know, hear me on Dave Ramsey or someplace else. They'd come there. But that's not when they made their purchase. They usually made their purchase between about 60 and 90 days after they were getting the newsletter. So that meant they were getting, you know, 8 or 10 weekly newsletters. And that repetition, then all of a sudden, gee, you know, Dan was like a trusted friend. And then they begin, you know, spending money on products. So it takes a little while to develop the kind of trust and relationships where people will then, you know, want to do business with you. So whatever you do, expect to do it repetitively. So if you're going to take ads out in the newspaper, don't take out one. If you've got a $1,000 budget, don't take out one at $1,000, you know, take out four ads at $250. You're way better off for people to see the repetition. That in itself will help you dramatically rather than just a one-time exposure. A lot of times I see people using these kind of things we've got here, and they do it once and then say, well, it didn't work. But you can't look at it like that. These are things that you have to do over extended periods of time, and then they build momentum that'll blow you away.
And it will, and that those numbers, you know, that's the other part of that. Some people who do not even have a product necessarily are doing some of these things really well just to build an audience. It's numbers. It's what we've all seen on internet sites where they have free services, and you wonder how can they afford to do this? Well, it's because when they get a few million people in there, they can do advertising and monetize those numbers. Or if you're Dan Miller and you go to a publisher and say, hey, I've got 100,000 subscribers, it's a slam dunk for a book deal. That's proof, social proof. So the numbers are another asset aside from pure direct sales that come back.
That's really an important point. I mean, the value of Facebook or MySpace, I mean, it's hard to monetize that. But when they have the number of subscribers and active registrants that they do, you better believe it has value. And companies pay big bucks for that just because they've got so many people connected to it.
Well, Facebook, yeah, it's free. And the guy is one of the youngest billionaires ever now.
Yeah, he turned down $1 billion, billion-dollar offer from Yahoo for that. He turned it down because he couldn't figure out what he'd want to do every day if he didn't have that to mess with.
Yeah, good problem to have. I'd enjoy contemplating that one. Well, newsletters. We did a call on newsletters. You know, it's so easy with any of the technology these days. They make things so easy. Constant Contact, we're fans of. They, for 15, I think it's 15 bucks a month, you can grow a list up to 500 people for $15 a month. They have more templates than you'll possibly even go through. But you can pick a template. You can add things to it. You can customize it. Now, they have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to make that thing user-friendly, and it's going to frustrate you. Unless you know tech stuff, it's still going to frustrate you. You can figure it out, but you can use their tech support, or you can hire somebody like Elias Salem, who's with us. We've been promoting him to just take care of it for you. But it's really simple to do. You get a little subscription box, which is a little bunch of code that can go right on your 212 website. You can stick it on there and start your newsletter right there. And
now, one of the things you mentioned there is important. Yeah, we want to have ready-made solutions in any of these areas, so you don't have to go through the learning curve that we did to learn these things. We want to make it easy where we have, you know, ready resources like Constant Contact or people. And for the most part, we're trying to identify people in 212 Connection who are experts in these areas that can help so we can help each other go through these things.
Because that's stumbling block. I mean, it is a newsletter. I'm amazed that people will have, my clients will have me at my rates, which are fairly high, do it because it's just cumbersome. It's a roadblock for them.
I know I do that. You know, technology frustrates me. I don't want to have to figure it out. I just want somebody to make it happen so that I can just use it. Well, let's keep moving, Kevin, on the blogs. Blogging is...
Yeah.
Blog. You ready to go there?
Yeah. Just one last thing on the newsletters. You know, pay attention to the newsletters out there. Sign up for lots of them. Get them. You'll see that more and more of them are morphing, just like what the 48 Days one has. And instead of being a long newsletter with all the content that sometimes people are not patient enough to read, give them the contents, give them a little piece, and allow them to go see what they want to look at. So I have some people using newsletters more like alerts, just to tell people, hey, here's some new blogs we've done, some new podcasts, or here's some information that you can check out online. And it's a quick newsletter. It's more like a tidbit type thing, or just an alert. So you can look at doing the newsletter different ways. It does not have to be many articles. It could be one article. But just look at the ones that are relevant. Get some samples in your arena and pay attention to the ones that you like and that you know are doing well.
Now, the blogs are a newer kind of phenomenon, but everybody's heard about them, and they're exploding in popularity at this point. But they're seen a little differently than newsletters or websites. Newsletters and websites still are seen as kind of one-way promotion, whereas blogs are seen as being a more intimate kind of communication, a more intimate connectedness, and they're seen as being more honest than a website that is obviously trying to promote something. Now, that's where you have to be careful with them, because people who have used blogs just to promote their own products or services, they can get blacklisted pretty quickly, where the community is so viral and you can just kind of get shoved off the face of the earth. So you have to use a blog in the way that it is expected to be used, where you're providing information, give people an opportunity to interact with it. And that's why we're using a combination. And I'm experimenting with this. Sometimes you'll see the newsletter that has pretty much just the static articles going out as it has, you know, for over the last couple of years. Other times you'll see, like this week, where it went out where the first two lead articles were just short lead-ins and linked over to the blog. But if you go to nomoremondaysblog.com, you'll see not only the extension of those first two newsletter articles, but you also see all the people who wanted to respond, and you can open the comments and see how they respond in there. And so they get a chance to see their own comments in there. And people like that kind of interaction and, you know, like being connected in that way. So I like the functionality of the blog now. The blogs are extremely easy to use. I mean, newsletters, in the only way that I've ever seen them function, are still pretty cumbersome in terms of templates, how you have to set them up. Of course, websites, you know, tend to be even more that way unless you really understand web language, HTML. It's pretty clunky. You can't just think about something and 5 minutes later have it up on your website, again, unless you're a web whiz, which I'm not, and I know most people are not. But a blog, you can. A blog, you can think about something, and 5 minutes from now you can have it up there. I use on mine WordPress. Kevin has listed here Blogger, WordPress, TypePad. Those are all free services. Doesn't cost you anything to set up a blog. And I use WordPress for mine. And I can put things in there that are extremely appealing. I mean, I can put videos in there. As you'll see, the one that has the new job market, there's a video in there. I can put in photos if I want to. I can link to Word documents that I've got. Now, I've got another thing. We didn't even put this up here because I'm just at the beginning stages, but we actually have it set up now where I can be out on my morning walk and see a bird fly to its nest, and it stimulates some kind of thought about the philosophy of life, and I can pick up my cell phone, call a number, do an audio recording, and it instantly appears on my blog as an audio link. Now, that's through Utters. And we can put up a link to show people how to get to that. Kevin, we probably ought to add that to the resources just as I'm thinking about it here. Any other comments on blogs, Kevin?
Just you talked about perspective, and I do think that with blogs, and of course, you know, one given for everybody is that you have a blog as part of your, if you are a, you know, if you're a pro or premium member right now, you have a blog, so everybody's got that. They can utilize it. I do think, though, that if you're going to utilize it, you've got to be consistent. That's part of the perception and the attractiveness to people to come to blogs is that they expect it to be up to date. You know, they want to see that there's frequent articles. I really feel like if you can't do once a week, don't bother, and you really should be doing more than that. You are about twice a week. Isn't that right?
Right. Uh-huh.
I think that's great. Obviously, lots of people who are doing them every day. I think the more you do it, the better, even if it's short. Now, not fluff, but even if it's short, give people a resource.
Now here's the challenge on that, and I you know, I'm still trying to figure this out, but I subscribe to lots of newsletters and lots of blogs. But what happens is when I see a blog and it's every single day, I don't read them as often. who's the guy who does, like, what is it, the magic of the morning or something? Monday morning magic?
Oh, right. Yeah.
I mean, that...
Monday morning memo. Right.
Monday morning memo. I mean, that is so profound, and I know that every Monday morning I get it. It's once a week, and I know that it's worthwhile, and I take the time to open it. But when I see things from people, when I'm getting three things a day from somebody, it almost puts me over the edge, you know, and we have some of the people, you know, in our circle with telemarketers, Kevin, you know, who do that,
right,
where you see, you know, I won't mention any names, but sometimes, I mean, literally three or four times a day. Well, I just delete them because it's just overload. So I think you have to find that balance for what really works.
I do. I think that, and also just be relevant to what your topic is. Now, I have a lady who is positioning herself as a news correspondent, where she's commentating on current events. So she is set up well to look every day. She's going to be, you know, scanning CNN, USA Today, MSNBC looking for relevant things and commenting. So that's one where it's relevant to do it every day. You know, for even what I do, it's hard. I'm going to be hard pressed to do something every day. So I think you need to look and see what's really relevant for your topic, so you're not wearing
and I want,
out.
I think you need to be focused. Don't be a generalist where you just any thought that comes through your mind you put out there. I don't think you'll build an audience that way. Be known as the expert in something, and then have your content reflect that.
Last comment on blogs, something that we see as being really powerful is commenting on current events. If you are a veterinarian and there's an article in USA Today on pets, talk about it. Put it in your blog, put a link to it, and put the title, the headline that's used. So if it's in USA Today, put their title, link straight to them, and comment on that. People like current events. They like to hear commentary on them. And it'll also help you in search engines. It's amazing what that will do sometimes.
Now that's one of the powerful benefits of blogging as compared to a newsletter or a website, is what it does for you in the search engines.
Right.
Because there's something about blogs. The search engines go out there and find that stuff, and because you are changing it frequently, and yes, put in all the links that you can in there, because those things help you. And it's amazing. My blog coach, helps me look every once in a while. We look at my blog and who else is referencing my blog, and it amazes me, all the different places that reference my blog. Well, that's the power of the viral community, and that happens more in blogging than it does in newsletters or websites by far.
Sure. Yeah, very true.
Well, we got podcasting. You've got it as a new radio, which certainly is the way that I see it. I mean, I had a physical radio show for 5 years, and I got to the point after the most recent year of doing it, being on the biggest station in Nashville, 100,000-watt station, goes into 3 states. Everybody sees it as the king of radio here in this part of the country, and it is. But even with that, as near as we could tell, about 95% of our listeners were listening to the podcast, not to the live show. And the reason is they wanted the flexibility of when they listen to it. They don't want to be locked into a particular time. They want to listen to it on their own terms, and so they were just simply downloading it. So in backing through the theory of that, it became questionable, why am I locking myself into a particular time and the logistics of having to go to a radio station, have a producer and all that, as compared to just doing a podcast. So we just eliminated the radio show. Now, there are a handful of our 212 members have radio shows, and there are some. Justin Lucas Savage is just starting a brand new one, and hey, I'm all for that. I mean, it's a fun thing to do. It does give you credibility like few other things do. So there's certainly nothing wrong with having a radio show. It's just that I like the flexibility of not being tied down to a particular time, and in doing the podcast, I can do it on my own time, my own terms. I still answer live questions. Our podcast does extremely well on iTunes, and all I do is just answer the questions that are submitted via email through our 48 Days website.
Well, and as you said, we'll mention radio itself real quick, but it does give credibility. But I think it's just one of those changes we're seeing in society, that instead of being captive to a radio station where you're not in control, you just can't beat the fact that with podcasting, you're in control. And we have these hordes of our masses of society that are going on to their computer every day, sticking their little iPod or whatever MP3 player in, and pulling down the exact shows of the exact information through the exact people they want to hear it from into their little MP3 player. And then on the way to work, they're not listening to talk radio and all the stuff that they don't care about. They're listening to exactly the content they want.
That's right. That's right.
That's powerful.
Now, we ought to point out that the things you have listed here, I mean, all of these services, the audio service that I have that puts audio links in my blog, it's free. All the blog services are free. Now, to have a template, you can send out a newsletter on your own and do it absolutely free. To have a template where you use, like, Constant Contact, I mean, with minimal Subscriber numbers, I think, up to like 5,000 or something. It costs about $25 a month, so it's minimal. But you can actually do one free if you want to do that. Doing podcasting, you can do that. You can download the program that I use is Audacity. It's a free program. Download it. Use that to create the podcast. From there, I create an MP3. Then I download that using FileZilla, which is an FTP server. Again, and believe me, I'm an amateur at this stuff, but I can waddle through some of these basic details. That's another free program that makes it then accessible to our podcast guy, Daniel Hathaway, and he does the magic to put it on our website and put it on iTunes. And, of course, putting it on iTunes is free as well. So it's amazing the resources that are available that cost absolutely nothing, but you still have to approach this as a business where you're strategic about how you do it. Do it consistently, provide good value, and then you build your audience, you build a trust, and build your bank account.
The podcasting is a little techie. We have somebody do it. I've never gone through the steps to try to do it myself. And ultimately, there is going to be some cost involved because your audio takes up a decent amount of space online. We just dealt with that, Dad, on our hosting. You know, we pay a little extra.
Right,
because of the space, so you do deal with that. But Podomatic, PODOMATIC.com, is a big resource for people to who are trying to do it themselves.
Now we pay for the extra space. The bandwidth is pretty big to put it on our website, but you can put it on iTunes and be charged nothing.
Okay,
which still amazes me.
Yeah.
I mean, we have a lot of content on iTunes and how they can host that. Because it is expensive space and charge nothing, I still don't fully understand. We just keep using it as long as we can do it that way.
And if you're doing podcasting, iTunes is, they're number one. They're king. They're like Amazon as far as rankings. You go in there and they'll rank you. And so we pay a lot of attention to the fact that the 48 days, if you go in there, there's into podcasting in iTunes, there's, I think, 13 categories. One of those is business. And under business, there's, I think, 5 subcategories. One is career. Generally, the 48 Days podcast is number one. Sometimes it'll drop down as far as number 3 or 4, but it's on average, it's number one in there. And that means a lot. That's a lot of visibility.
I just did a podcast with AMA. Oh, what is it called? Oh, that's like Edgewise or something. Anyway, it's a real big name podcast through American Management Association out of New York, and they had just interviewed people like Stephen Covey and Jack Welch, and they contacted me, and I was like, "Geez, what are you guys doing?" Contacted me, and they watch my podcast numbers. They never get as high as we do with their podcast. And this is some big major organization that does business podcast, but they contact me because they watch the numbers.
Well, and I'll say it's relevant, too. The podcast, of course, came after your newsletter, and it was your newsletter that initially launched your podcast using some of those numbers and then coming out and saying, so you've established one audience to come out and say, hey, we've got another format that we're offering our information on. Here's a podcast. That pushes some numbers of people downloading that, and that helps get some exposure, and then it just grows. And at this point, that audience has grown to vie for or surpass the newsletter audience for 48 days.
Right. Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, you have to keep your ear to the ground in terms of new trends. This is like anything in business. I did a radio interview this morning, and I was saying, the risk, people think that going off and doing something on your own is risky. Well, the risk is staying where you are and thinking that things are going to stay the same, because they aren't. And this is no different. This is just like, General Motors had better be addressing the changes in the world economics, or they're not going to be able to survive, and they're in danger. We don't do things the same. I can't start in 2000, as an example, with a newsletter and think that, no, I'm just going to do the newsletter for the next 35 years and get a gold watch. That doesn't happen either. So we're always looking at what are the new opportunities, what are the new trends here, what are the ways that people want to get information. I mean, publishers are confronted with that. I mean, the Kindle, which is the new little product that you can get through Amazon. It's a little handheld device with about a 5-inch screen, and you can download books electronically. And you can get No More Mondays electronically rather than in a physical copy if you have a Kindle. Well, that scares the fire out of publishers because things are changing. One of the guys in my Wednesday morning group is head of one of the record labels here in Nashville. Well, they know that kids aren't going to be forced to buy CDs anymore where they have 13 songs on there. They may choose the one song they want and be willing to pay 99 cents. That changes your business model dramatically. We've got to do the same things. We've got to be innovative and creative, and that's what we want to keep helping you understand where these new opportunities are. But it doesn't mean that you need to go back and get a $100,000 loan through your bank to do it. No, it's just be aware of what's happening, tweak what you're doing a little bit, and you can stay right out there on the cutting edge. Well, let's go through these other couple here, Kevin. We're going to be on top of the hour here shortly. Speaking, that's something, I mean, I talk to people all the time who, I mean, Joel Baugus, I don't know if Joel's on the line, but, you know, talked to Joel yesterday, last night. You know, Joel does a great job of getting out and speaking, and it's growing his business really rapidly. Joel's in just outside of Dallas. But, you know, that's something that he enjoys doing. Personally, I really don't. I don't enjoy doing that. I try to look for ways that I can grow my business without having to, you know, go do speaking gigs. And I do them very rarely. So, again, this is not where you have to do every single one. Choose the ones that really fit you, that you want to do, that you enjoy doing, and then just have fun with that and knock it out of the park.
Yeah.
So if you I think you ought to be able to take your topic and you ought to be able to do, I always tell people they ought to be able to do a 60-minute, a 45-minute, and a 20-minute presentation of what it is that you have as an area of expertise. And if you can do that, you'll find a lot of opportunities. You know, you can do luncheons. I mean, my goodness, how many civic organizations? I have spoken at Rotary Clubs more times than I can absolutely remember. But, you know, they tend to have about a 22-minute time slot in their lunch meetings where they need an active speaker. They need to do that every week. So if you're available and you can present interesting, exciting information in that period of time, you can get opportunities to do it.
And there are not a lot of providers. I think there's less than there used to be, people who are really promoting themselves as speakers. It's kind of like the radio, like we mentioned before. It's definitely not my chosen method either, because you got to make so much of an effort to go somewhere and present. But it is good for credibility. Even publishers, you know, we know that publishers are still enamored with speaking. Even, you know, they are sometimes more enamored to hear that you spoke to 1,000 people than that you did a newsletter to 100,000.
That's old school
thinking, but it's still a perspective. It's relevant, and if you can put down on your put on your website testimonials that you have spoken for this group, spoken for that group, people have no idea if there were 2 people there or 2,000. It does look good.
Right.
Articles? Yeah.
Now, that happens to be one of my personal favorites, is writing articles. I've got 4 articles that I'm writing right now, just different requests that have come in. I've got one that I need to submit yet tonight, and that is for, let me think a minute, that's for the Assemblies of God Evangel. They're primary magazine, the magazine that goes out to about 250,000 members in that denomination. I'm not part of that denomination, but I get requests from lots of different places. I mean, I've written articles. I was just interviewed for what will be an article in Success magazine in the next issue. Back in December, I wrote an article for AARP magazine, which goes out to 38 million people, which is kind of a nice gig. It's the biggest magazine in the world, bar none. And so that's a great opportunity. I've got an article due in a couple days here for the Southern Baptist Christian Singles magazine, targeted to the 30-year-old single in terms of understanding what's happening in the workplace. Got another article that's due, and it's a 600-word article on reinventing yourself. I can't think right off the top of my head who that's for, but you know, there's a lot of places I've found that magazines are extremely receptive to articles. Again, they have a lot of content to fill, and so once you find a magazine that you think would be a good fit for your area of expertise, almost all of these you can go right to their website and see submission guidelines. That's what you're going to look for. Or you can get a copy of Writer's Market, which is a big paperback book that's updated every year, and it's got about 8,000 contacts in there for all kinds of media, but it'll have in their magazines what they look for, how to do submissions to them, and most of them will even say how much they pay per word, you know, for the articles. Now, I don't look at writing articles as a source of revenue. Most of the articles that I write pay nothing. I've got one here that says, actually, it's the one for the Christian Single Magazine, 900-word article, and they pay me $100. Well, that's fine, but I would have written it if they paid me nothing, because that's not what I look for. I look for this continuing net of exposure that then directs people back to our website, which I insist on having that byline in anything that I write. The ARP magazine article, again, I agreed to write that, you know, readily, because, my goodness, to have a chance to go out and promote my new book to 38 million people, you better believe it. How much is it going to cost me to be able to write that article for you? You know, I should be looking at it like that. And they came back and said, well, they're sorry. They hoped that it wouldn't be a disappointment, but they only budgeted $4,000 for me to write that article. Well, good grief. I've never been paid that much to write an article before in my life, and I was delighted to do it. And they actually paid me another $400. I got a check, and I called them and said, what's this for? And it's, oh, they used it with their online version of the magazine, and they paid me an extra fee because they used it online, which I thought was a hoot. But again, if you enjoy writing, I mean, writing is my primary form of marketing, bar none. If you don't, then don't struggle with that. Don't think that you have to write articles, but if it's something that fits you, then certainly jump online there.
And that's on
radio?
Well, just on the articles, I think for most people it's real relevant to even start local. Look at your local papers, find the editor that's relevant for your topic, and just submit articles to them. And you'll be amazed at the time will come, the moons will align, and they'll need a topic, need information on your topic, and you're the one that's been, you know, consistent, and you'll get that call and get that
opportunity. The first articles that I ever did, Kevin, I don't know if you remember. You were certainly younger, but you probably remember me telling it. I would write, it was nothing but a letter to the editor to the Nashville Business Journal. They would print that in their op-ed section. To the average reader, it just looks like an article, if it's written well. Now, if it just says, you know, gee, I think you people ought to, you know, come see me or buy my books or pay me for coaching, they're not going to run it. But if it really is an informative article, they'll submit it. And I didn't have any contact with the editors. They didn't ask for articles. I just wrote it just as an opinion explaining, you know, what people can do when they go through a job loss, or explaining why jobs are disappearing like they are, just those kind of things. Well, they started running those opinion letters that I would write, and they started getting requests from readers to have constant letters from me, articles from me. So then I started writing articles and wrote articles for the Nashville Business Journal for, I guess, 3 or 4 years before I just got busy and didn't follow up and keep it going like I should have. But that's how I started doing it, and that opened doors to interviews and other newsletters, newspapers and magazines, and gave me more opportunity and, of course, the confidence to start submitting articles to bigger magazines. On the radio, we've talked about that a little bit already, in terms of doing a radio show, which, again, keep in mind, I mean, to have a show, if it's Rush Limbaugh or Dr. Laura or Dave Ramsey or Michael Savage or somebody like that, yeah, those have a lot of power when you talk about syndication. That's a big animal. It's political and and expensive and a lot of those things. But if you want to have a radio show, I mean, there are radio stations in every community that are having trouble right now because people have so many options. They're having trouble keeping their time filled, keeping their ad space filled and all of that, especially on the weekends. You have to understand they want to sell their time on the weekends. They have a hard time selling ads for a once-a-week show. What they really prefer to do is just sell the time. And you can talk to a local AM station, and they have a time slot from 2 to 3 on Saturday afternoon. Now, believe me, that's not strong listening time. But if you want to have a radio show and get the experience and be able to record it, create a podcast, CDs of it or whatever, interview people, I mean, you can do it. And you'll be able to find, you know, time slots like that that you can buy for $50 an hour and have your own radio show. Now, depending on the station, the coverage, you know, it's going to be more expensive than that. But you really can. I mean, they want to sell the time. And if you repair cars or grow dandelions or bake cheesecakes, you can approach them and say you want to have a radio show. They aren't going to do real. They're going to talk to you and say, "Oh, this is just what we've been waiting for. You're perfect. Our audience is going to love you." But the bottom line is, they want to sell the time. So if you want a radio show, you can get that done. You can be on cable TV. The hours that they have to fill, the same kind of thing. You can have a cable TV show. If you want to show up and do it, you can negotiate anything you want to on that. You don't have to be intimidated by any price they throw out. You can offer what you think it's worth. You'll be amazed at the opportunities to have your own radio show or cable TV show if you want to do that. Now, the other part of radio is doing interviews. Now, I am a big believer in that. I do radio interviews every single day. I don't think I've missed a day since January 15th, at least, when No More Mondays was released. There was one Monday right after that came out, a couple weeks after that came out, where in one day I did 18 radio interviews. Now, I love doing radio. I love the format. I love the fact that it's, you know, short, sweet, to the point. Radio hosts vary dramatically. You'll get hosts that have never looked at your book, never looked at your material. They don't know who you are until 30 seconds before you go on live. That's okay. If you're going to do a radio interview, you have it set up, send them the questions to ask you. Make it easy on them. Give them hooks. Give them interesting questions to ask you, and they'll read right off the script and just feed it right to you and give you every opportunity to talk about your area of expertise. And they're always going to say, radio hosts don't mind at all saying, where can our listeners get more information? Don't be bashful about saying, you need to go to this website. You're going to get more information there. And people do. So I do radio a lot. My first interview this morning was at 8:15. It was a live radio station out of Kansas City. Can I just line them up? Now, I have, at this point, publishers with marketing teams that do a lot of the legwork for that. So I don't do a whole lot of calling to do it. But you can do it yourself. You really can do it yourself if you want to do that. Radio hosts need to fill their slots with interesting information, and there's a whole lot of them out there that are dying on the vine, and they'd be delighted to have something interesting to talk about. So if you can help people with their diet or help people with their sports performance or help people feel better about themselves or get over emotional hurdles or whatever it is that you're doing in your coaching arena, put that together in a concise form where you have six questions that you would have a host ask you. If you want, we can post the questions that I give people for No More Mondays. They're just questions. They ask me the questions, and I feed them back. Now, they can have all the liberty to ask me anything they want to, but for the most part, they're going to go in the questions that I give them. Now, we give them, my publishers give them free books to give away. I do that a lot. I mean, if I go on a local TV show, I'm going to give them three copies of my book to give away. if you have an e-book or something that you are promoting or recommending, certainly have those as giveaways. Now, we're going to create some links to show you how to do this, too. If you want to do radio interviews, I'm having more of you ask me about that. You know, how do I get all the radio interviews that I get? There are some sources that we're going to help you get access to. There's a young guy named Alex Carroll who a few years ago wrote a book called Beat the Cops. And he self-published it. He's never had a publisher. But he sold a couple million dollars worth of that little book himself. And the only thing he does is radio interviews. That's all he does. He brags about laying in bed all day, you know, with the phone held up to his ear, because he does radio interviews. He books them himself. He sends out his own releases. He does a follow-up. And he's got some systems for how to do that. And we'll link you to him and maybe some other resources to just little guides to teach you how to do, how to get radio interviews. TV is the last thing you've got on here, Kevin.
Well, and you kind of mentioned it in your radio. You know, it's very similar to buying time or getting interviews. It really doesn't differ a whole lot, just a different format.
We have three major channels here in Nashville, you know, ABC affiliate, NBC, CBS. They have shows all day long where they're looking for content. One of the most popular ones is, Channel 4, I don't even know which one that is, but they have Talk of the Town, and it runs for a couple hours during the noontime time. Holly Turner is the host of that. I've developed a relationship with her over the years. She loves my stuff. Anytime I want to go on there, it's an open door to go on. Now, I'm going to have probably 5 minutes, but that's pretty powerful promotion when you're sitting there on TV and people are watching that in the middle of the day, and boom, they're going to do what you ask them to do. And if that's, you know, go to your website and see what it is that you are an expert in. You can come out and help them make their yard look gorgeous. They're going to go there and do that. And I've sent a lot of people here locally to the same resources that I've used over the years in TV. Just make the contacts, let them know what it is you do, and they're going to book you. Now, if it's a real busy, if there's something in the breaking news, you're going to get bumped. They'll just reschedule you, go back again. I was actually in Norfolk, Virginia. I had gone over there to be on CBN and booked being on a local TV show the same time. Before I went back to the on my way back to the airport, booked myself being on there. Well, I got there and there was a armed robbery that had just happened. They had helicopter coverage where they were chasing the robber through the streets. And the host kept apologizing to me. I don't know how soon this is going to be over. And I said, hey, don't worry about it. Well, as it ended up, I had about 60 seconds to be on with her live because of the breaking news. That's rare, but you'll run into that, and it's just part of the TV kind of experience.
Well, there's a lot of pieces, you know, of that, of communication. Now, one really strong proponent of that, of course, is your website. All of these things either generate from your website or you need that to back you up. Having yourself positioned there, having your unique selling proposition, your niche laid out there is where all of these things are going to either come from, or you're going to need those to just, you know, to help support. When you're talking to somebody trying to get an article, trying to get an interview, they're going to come back and look for your website. They're going to Google you, or they're going to look at the website that you gave them, and they're going to come back there for proof. And every time any of those interviews, any home, you know, any successes you get, testimonies, you need to, you know, get those on there, and it all works together. I've met with a gentleman this week who is a multimillionaire in the insurance industry. He's created a new insurance product, and he's selling it to people like FedEx and FedEx, R.J. Reynolds, and whoever the eighth largest law firm is in the country, I have no idea. But he knows that those folks are going to be looking at him, scrutinizing him, and he does not really have a web presence. He has an old website that's about 3 years out of date, and he knows he needs to have that in this day and age, and he's right. So for all of us, that's still the foundation of all these pieces of communication. We have gone really long.
Yeah, let's open the lines and handle some questions.
Yeah,
incidentally, Well, let's open the lines, and then I'm going to comment on a couple what some of our people are actually doing.
Yeah.
But we can go to live questions here.
Can you go ahead and hit the buttons to open it? Okay.
That should have
us open. Now we've got people on the webcast, and we've got some questions there that we can hit. If anybody's on the line live, if you have a question, go ahead and shoot. Anyone?
All right. Don't all raise your hand at once. Well, let's
okay.
just keep. Let's just you know, one of our members who has done an incredible job of getting promotion is West Connor. Dr. West
right.
Connor. West, are you on the line?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah,
yep.
Man. I can hear you. I've
been muted myself.
Okay. Well, you're a great example, West, of getting on TV. You know, what you've done with Channel 2 here has just been remarkable. You know, tell people briefly how you got your first exposure there.
I just kept asking, and finally got my big break. I guess it was it's kind of a funny story. It was about 10:30 at night, and I just got an email from the morning news producer. He said, give me a call whenever you get a chance. Here's my cell phone number. You can call me late. I'm still up. So I called him. He said, hey, can you come on in tomorrow morning, and we'll do something here on TV? I said, yeah. So he said, come on in about 6:15, and we'll talk about something interesting. That was his quote. And I said, well, what do you want to talk about? He said, I don't know, this, that. He gave me like three subjects. So I said, all right, well, I'll get you a couple of questions and answers before tomorrow morning. So I'm up till 2 o'clock in the morning just racking my brain trying to come up with a half a dozen questions for each one of these subjects. And his view of be here at 6:15 and we'll do something on TV, on the air, and my view of be there at 6:15 was a little bit different. His was, when he said be there at 6:15, he means live on TV at 6:15. I thought I was going to get there, sit down, have a cup of coffee, a donut, and then go on. No, it was in the door. You know, I forget the guy's name now. I get escorted in. I said, hi, I'm West Connor. He goes, oh, okay. And then Heather Orne, who was the anchor at the time, walked right up to me and said, where's Dr. Connor? I said, oh, that's me. And she says, oh, hi. And I introduced myself, and I said, well, here's my questions. And he says, all right, when did the producer looks at her and says, when's he going on? She says, oh, he's on next. So they pushed me right into the green screen. I hadn't been inside 30 seconds, no rehearsal, no nothing. All of a sudden, boom, there I am live on TV. And it was
first time on TV.
Hey, there I am. You know, you know, 30 seconds in this big news studio, and boom, you know, no warm-up, no nothing. But after a couple times, then it's like the pros, you know, like the golfers that can walk right out and just hit the tee right off the tee box, you know, 300 yards, not even looking at it. You just walk right on, and you say, okay, and then the light comes on, and you just go. And you just know, you know what you're doing, and you do your 60, 90 seconds, and then you're done. It's old hat after a few times.
Wes, go back real quick. You said you'd been asking. I mean, literally, you'd what?
Yeah.
You emailed them, called. What'd you do?
Let's see. I think I emailed, faxed. It was pretty much, hey, I've got this book out on how people can save money on their prescription drugs. I think I have some great information for you, for your audience. You present it to the producers to benefit their audience, their listeners, their readers, however you're doing it. You know, if it's a magazine, it's obviously readers. If it's TV, it's viewers. So you say, I have some great information that your viewers would feel as a value to them. I'd love to come on and present it. I talk about how people can save money on their prescription drugs, or we can talk about current topics. So if something happens in the news, you can email, fax, or even call. But calling, you're going to get the gatekeeper and
right.
just get left. You know, you have to leave a message. But if you fax or you email, if you have their private email address, especially something current that's on the news, if you can twist that into your niche, you'll be here and get on. I mean, my latest thing was when that Mitchell report came out with all the steroids with the baseball players.
Right.
I didn't make it, but you could get on TV by saying, hey, I'm a pharmacist. You know, here's exactly what steroids do, and here's how it affects the body, and here's how it makes you stronger and can recover faster. Here are the side effects. Here's the pluses and minuses. If you want me to come on air and speak to your audience about it and give them a quick rundown of why these athletes are taking them, I'm free to come on. so here's my contact information. And then you give a little bio about yourself, about you've been on the air before and you've written articles and been on radio, so you have media experience. And, you know, if they're interested, they'll call you. But
yeah.
The more you ask, the better your chance of response will be.
And once you've established that kind of reputation, you know, where they know you don't stumble, you can handle being on TV, then the best thing to do is to watch for those newsworthy items. If there's some kind of breaking news and you say, hey, you know, here's a slant on it. You know, in my perspective as a pharmacist, whatever, that's where, I mean, when you see anything that news breaks, you see Larry King that night, he's going to have two or three people on who are just people in that field who can offer some kind of perspective, you know, based on, you know, their area of expertise.
Yeah,
well,
and
that's
how
cool.
I'm sorry.
That's all right.
How I got a lot of my topics when I was pursuing this, you know, a little over a year ago, I went on to Google News and Yahoo News, you know, every couple hours, and I would find the latest stories because the news organizations are looking at the same news feeds that Yahoo and Google are looking at. So
mm-hmm.
if Yahoo and Google think it's important, so do the news, the local news. So if you can find something in the national news or the world news that you could create a local angle to it, in other words, like the baseball players or the football players, all right, if it's football players abusing these anabolic steroids, all right, what are the Tennessee Titans? I mean, how are they going to be affected or not affected by this scandal? And you can swirl it into a local angle, you're more apt to getting on as well.
Yep, absolutely. Okay. Well, we got some questions here. Here's one from Steve Berkey in Virginia. Says, Kevin, I'm interested in adding a blog with a rating scale similar to Amazon. For example, people would be able to use the rating scale to pick 4 out of 5 stars and provide a comment regarding a featured product, such as a Polar heart rate monitor. I'm planning on adding e-commerce to the site, 90revolutions.com, but want to make an interactive experience. Could you provide me with a resource to execute the plan?
And I surely can't. That's a great idea. And, Steve, I actually have an email from you that I've half-typed and haven't sent yet. I think you sent it yesterday. I'll look for that and see if I can not only find it, but communicate it back with everybody. It's a great idea. The ratings, I mean, as we know, Amazon, you know, relies on those ratings so much. eBay, I mean, so many things. The movies that are out there, podcasting in iTunes. You know, has reviews on there. As far as a blog, I have not seen it. I bet it exists, and I will check that out because, it's great. You want that?
Yeah, I'll bet, too, it does. Yeah, it's a great idea.
Hey, you should take that one. You've got the blog, Coach. Ask him if that exists.
I can do that.
Okay.
Yeah, I do have a blog, Coach. Now, that's how I approach most of the things that we've talked about here tonight. I'm too impatient to really weed through it myself. And so I usually get people who are experts in those areas. And don't assume that just always requires big dollars, because it really doesn't. There are people in these technical areas that are eager to give their advice and opinions, and it doesn't always require big bucks. But what we want to do is we want to get, you know, people in place so they're available and they are just kind of menu items you can pick and choose from.
Right.
Well, let's. We've got some more questions here. Again, those of you who are on the web can send questions, and we've got several to go through here. Or if anybody else is on a live call and you've got a question, you want to jump in?
Well, this is Micah in Lubbock, Texas. I just wanted to say hi, guys. I've never talked to you live on the phone.
No.
Well, hi, Micah.
Yeah, I know you're usually on the webcast. I was going to hit one of your questions or comments. There, you know, on the newsletter, you mentioned that, you get tired of getting them consistently and like doing a monthly. That's always debatable. I'll tell you, I have generally been a fan of weekly, just as far as staying top of mind. But I think that's where you can also look at. Now, I've seen your newsletter, and you've got you put quite a bit of information in your newsletter. You know, you could break that up and have it weekly, but I think that is debatable whether you do it. I know some good ones. I got one today that I actually read through. It's from another branding guy, whose stuff I read. He sends his bi-monthly.
Bi-monthly.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think it's a debatable question. I certainly don't have any hard and fast rule about how often information ought to be out. That's why I'm still experimenting even with the blog. The people who subscribe to my blog then get notification when there's a new item up. So it comes into their email. My fear is that if I, you know, do every day, it'll overwhelm them and they just won't pay attention. So I'm doing about twice a week. That's just a judgment call. That's not something scientifically determined. I mean, I get a lot of newsletters are weekly. I don't know of many that I get that are not at least weekly. Even like Kim Komando, she has an incredibly lengthy newsletter, but it's so valuable. She has such a strong reputation that I at least scan through it. Now, I often don't spend more than about 2 minutes on it, but I at least scan through it. So it's up for grabs. I think experimenting is a worthwhile, you know, endeavor on how often you send out an email or do blogging at this point.
And well,
one
I know
of the
with
things,
my, I'm sorry,
go
I
ahead, Micah.
I couldn't say with my turf newsletter, once a month is really appreciated, and it's the content. People tell me all the time that they will save my emails. They will keep them all the time and refer back to them. And hopefully one of our computer guys, either Eli or Daniel, I'll get working on my turf website where I can actually have that information posted where people can go there and look at it. So I think it kind of goes back to the Zig Ziglar deal. You help enough people get what they want, you eventually get what you want. So if you are putting out good information and not just trying to sell product, I think that's what is useful. Now, my turf tips, I will come out with a special alert, you know, like if we're put under water restrictions or something like that, and get that information out as an alert, and people are very thankful for that too.
Kevin and I have had these discussions 100 times with people who are in the internet world. You know, there are people like, you know, Alex Mendozian. You know, you get on his mailing list and you're going to get things, you know, 10 times a week from him. And we're like, you know, how do you do that without just wearing people out? And some of these guys, their philosophy is, you know, hey, big deal. If somebody doesn't like it, they aren't going to be, you know, serious prospects for you anyway, so they can go away. But it's just hard for me to understand that you can just hammer people again and again and again and again. And he's one, frankly, now we have taken advantage of some of his material. He gives great information, always provides more than you expect. But I probably don't read 2% of the stuff that he sends out. It's still there, but I just delete it because it's just such overload. If I read all of it, I'd do nothing else during the course of the day. All right. Well, we got other questions. Micah, you submitted a question online here. How much is Constant Contact with over 500 names? I think the breaking point is actually more than that. Do you know, Kevin?
I thought it was $15 is what they showed for 500 names, but I think that then you probably go up an increment of $5 or something, $5 or $10 for, you know, an incredibly large amount.
Yeah, I think even to go up to like 5,000, it's only like $25 a month to have that access, and that's pretty interactive. You can use that just for a short blurb just to send out to your list, or you can use it for a regular newsletter. They've got beautiful templates that you can use there, and yeah, so that's pretty user-friendly.
And they generally have a 30-day free trial, so you can go, you know, pink around if you're thinking about it and play with it for 30 days and at no cost, I believe, and then it'll be $15. So, yeah, it's a really good service. Well, do we have any other live calls? I know we've gone long enough now. We need to wrap the call up.
Got one question. Yeah. Kevin, Dan, this is Jeff Cluxton.
Hey, Jeff.
Yes, sir.
Good evening. Hey, what about organized networking groups? What's your take on those?
I can jump in there. Are you talking about like BNI?
BNI. I joined one here in Indiana called Rainmakers. It's an organized group that meets monthly, and there's a, you know, a small membership fee and that kind of thing.
Yeah. You know, one of the things conspicuously absent on this list of things we're talking about tonight here for networking is those kind of things. You know, Chamber of Commerce, Rotary, you know, civic groups, BNI, Rainmaker, you know, there's lots of organizations out there. They're all fine. I don't do those. Now, and there's not a real – I don't enjoy just social chit-chat, which comprises a lot of what happens there typically, but I certainly am not opposed to that for somebody who, you know, who enjoys that. I think it's a great way to get connected in a local community. So much of what we do at this point, you know, is really national and international, and so I just don't do that. I mean, I speak at the Chamber of Commerce. There's three of them right here locally, and, you know, at least once a year I go and speak to them, and I'm happy to do that. It's a great group of people, but I'm so jealous with the use of my time, I guess, that I just don't carve out the time to be involved in those. Now, that's not a definitive answer at all. I think they are valuable, especially as you're building reputation in a local community.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a personality style as well. I don't do those much, but I do well when I'm in there, you know, as far as making contacts and networking.
We have to drive 30 miles to find another house, don't you?
Yeah. There you go.
No, yeah, exactly.
I need some networking opportunities here and there to see a personal face aside from my framers.
Talk to the squirrels.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay, well, thanks for your input. I appreciate it.
Sure, Jeff. All right, well, Kevin, we are right on top of the end of our
recording,
end of our webcast here.
Yeah, okay. Well, we will wrap it up, and I will follow up with getting some of these resources on the toolbox page in the inner circle.
I've made some notes as we've talked here, some things I'll get to you.
Okay, I'll make an effort to get those in and then mention them in tomorrow's newsletter.
All right.
Okay.
Great having you all on board on the web and on the live call, and thanks for your participation. As always, we're eager to work with you as we expand the 212 connection.
Thank you. Right. Good night.
Good night.